John Busby with a culture buzz, and I tell you, I have a smile usually about 5 days in advance when I know my guest has come into the studio, because I always know he's going to share some great stuff. Jim Autry is in the studio with me. I have gotten to know Jim over a long period of time. I first met him through Tin Roof, Recollections of a Southern Boyhood, more than 20 years ago. In fact, he was doing a presentation at the former Des Moines Club downtown, and he wanted someone to write a quick bio, and I about melted on the carpet because he says, I kind of like what you wrote about me. So he doesn't remember that at all, but over the years, I've had the honor and privilege to get to know him better. I have greatly appreciated things like how to learn to be a more caring person through his Love and Profit, The Art of Caring Leadership, and you know I've played many times his take, and also he and his wife's co-authored take of gratitude, choosing gratitude. He has the book, and then they decide to do it 365 days a year, just so you don't miss a single day of having no gratitude. He's going to make sure, they're going to make sure you have it. Well, Jim, in his just kind of quiet little chuckling way, said, well, I've been working on another book, and it's a little different than some of the things I've done before. And I said, I can't wait to see it. He finally sent a copy. I have been zipping through this book faster than I've zipped through any book. I am not through it, thank goodness, because it's one of those where you want to keep going. The Cold Warrior is what it's called. And there's a subtitle to it, When Flying Was Dangerous and Sex Was Safe. Jim, once you have a title like that on your front page, on the cover of the book, you know you're going to raise a few eyebrows with your name on there.
I hope it makes a few sales, too.
I hope so, too. I can't imagine it won't. Well, before we started sharing the conversation with the folks, you were telling me about a friend who your book saved him. You maybe can't refer specifically to the passage, but he was on an extended flight that turned out to be a flight from hell, it sounded like.
Yeah, he said that my book saved him from suffering on that flight, and he told me about one passage that it particularly laughed at. It is a passage, unfortunately, I cannot read on the air. You know, this is my first novel, my first published novel, and I've written nonfiction all these years. And they've generally been things that are uplifting and, you know, like Spirit of Retirement and such. But this one is pretty raucous. It is about my experiences. It's based on my experiences, not autobiographical. It's based on my experiences for 3 years in France flying F-100 fighter bombers during the Cold War. And it's in those days, it was only about 10 years after World War II, so it wasn't quite as rigid as it is today. The pilots were, you know, drink and fly, so and party. So there's a lot of that in the book. There's some flying scenes, there's some sex scenes, there's some love scenes, and there's some like organization scenes. But I've had good feedback on the book, and I'm pretty excited about it.
I have to believe one of the strongest responses from a group you've received has to be from your veteran friends, especially those in the Air Force.
Yeah, well, they keep trying to figure out who it's about.
Let them keep scratching their
head.
Yeah,
exactly right.
Well, the thing I enjoy the most about this is that your writing always has a depth and a special perspective that you bring to things. And I am from the school that you can't know the light if you don't know the dark. You can't know good times if you haven't gone through tough times. And this kind of shows the fact that, well, by gosh, you maybe were in situations where you scrape your knuckles and skinned your knees, and and it was a wild, and well, it's kind of like the Wild West of the 1950s Cold War era.
Yeah, well, that's true. I didn't scrape my knuckles, closer, wetting my pants would be closer to the, what I would have gone through.
Again, everyone I've talked to is lucky enough to have gotten a copy of your book, is just having a great time with it. You're starting to get out there talking about the book. You can go online, look under, just Google Jim Autry, The Cold Warrior, and you will find a way to get the book. Good people like Alice up at Beaverdale Books, I'm sure, has got it well stocked. And if she runs out, gets sold out, she'll get a copy for you. Don't worry about that.
And I'm going to do a reading there on August 17th at Beaverdale Books.
There we are. We're going to let those let everyone know about that, too. Hopefully, you have a little passage selected there. And I know because this is kind of a salty text, you had to carefully work into a passage that we could read here.
Yeah, this passage is about flying. I have to set it up a little bit. Every year, all the pilots in the Air Force have to go through an instrument school to get up to date in their ability to fly instruments in the worst kinds of conditions. So my young pilot, who's just gotten there, he's the main character, he needs to go through this instrument check. Well, in the instrument school, the guys who give that, they all are sort of jealous of the squadron pilots. They're not flying the fighters, they're flying the trainers, and so they're a little hostile, and whereas the pilots have a very informal sort of atmosphere, these guys are a little more rigid. So this pilot who's going to give him the check ride has been told by his boss, ring him out. Man, I'd love to see him flunk. I'd love to flunk one of those red tails. And the squadron is a red, their tails are red, so they're called red tails. So his name is Lieutenant Perkins. And our main character, Daniels, has been told that rank among lieutenants is like virginity among prostitutes. It doesn't exist. So they don't say sir to one another, etc. So I'll start. Daniels was surprised by Perkins' manner. He seemed on edge, almost hostile during the briefing. It began with a greeting. I'm pretty sure I can handle the weather. Do I call you Richard or Dick? He asks. You can call me sir. Apparently, a rank among lieutenants in the instrument school was not like virginity among prostitutes. Sorry, sir. Okay, let's be brief. After we line up with the runway, go under the hood. A full instrument takeoff? Any objection? No, sir. I just thought we didn't do those after graduating from basic. Well, Lieutenant Daniels, you're in Europe now. There are more IFR days here than any base in the States. If you're on alert and the flag goes up and it's 0-0, nobody's going to say, let's wait till the weather gets better to go to war. Of course, I understand. I hope so. After we're airborne, you'll stay under the hood. Our call sign is India Sierra 1. Do a standard procedure or whatever the tower tells you to do. We'll climb to 20,000, take up a heading of 180 degrees, then do a radio range orientation back into Dijon. Anyway, he does very well with all these things, and they're about to go into a maneuver. And all of a sudden, the guy in the front seat says, Perkins shouted something unintelligible into the intercom. Then Daniels smelled an acrid odor and saw smoke creeping under the hood. He switched to 100% oxygen just as Perkins shouted it again. Smoke in the cockpit. Roger, said Daniels, I'm on 100% oxygen. What's going on? How bad is it? Something in the circuit breaker panel, I think. Daniels began pulling back the hood, because he's under the hood for instruments, to stow it when he saw flash and flames from the left-hand side of the front cockpit. The smoke stung his eyes. He lowered his visor. Perkins? Perkins? He could see Perkins trying to lean away from the flames and fanning his left arm in the air. The sleeve of his flying suit was smoking. Fire in the cockpit. Eject! Eject! Yelled Perkins. And Daniels instinctively ducked as the canopy flew off. The wind slammed him back into the seat and tore his helmet and mask as Perkins' ejection seat shot over his head. The plane rolled left. Rather than reach for the injection handle, Daniels grabbed the stick and leveled the wings. The noise was numbing, and he was being buffeted by the slipstream. The wind tore at his oxygen mask and buffeted his helmet so viciously he could hardly see. This is it, he thought. He'd have to eject, the fear of which had always plagued him through flight training. He'd known it was a possibility, of course, but the idea of ejecting and riding a parachute to the ground scared the hell out of him. Somehow he'd never been able to even force himself to imagine floating with nothing but a parachute and straps between him and falling. Now he had to do it. Perkins had ordered him to abandon the plane. He tightened his chin strap and oxygen mask as tightly as he could, hoping he wouldn't lose them. Pulled his feet back, set up straight, helmet against the headrest, arms and elbows tucked closely, reached for the handle that would fire an explosive charge and shoot his seat clear of the airplane. He was ready, scared or not, but he paused. The airplane's still flying, he thought. I was able to roll out of the steep turn, so the controls are working, and I don't see any flames in the front cockpit or any smoke. Maybe the wind blew it out. He let go of the ejection handle, reached for the stick and throttle, and tried the radio. Arc Tower, this is India Sierra 1, Mayday, 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 he yelled. The wind noise was oppressive, and he was not sure he'd be able to hear any response, but thought he might discern some indication of contact. He switched to the emergency frequency. Arc Tower, Mayday, 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 this is India Sierra 1, Mayday, 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 we've had a fire in the cockpit, one pilot ejected, no canopy. Nothing, no response. Well, what he does is he realizes he's in control of the plane still. It's not going down. He doesn't see any smoke. He thinks maybe the slipstream blew out the fire. So what he ends up doing, rather than ejecting, he flies back to the field. And then he has to wag his wings to let him know his radio's out. Scene switches. Master Sergeant on the ground in a tower looks out. He says, "See, put your glasses on that T-bird, see if it's something." And so he says, "Holy smoke, there's no canopy." So they send the crash vehicles out. But the further problem is, when they put the landing gear down, the nose gear didn't come down. It stuck about halfway down. Excuse me. So Daniels is coming in. He said, "Oh, God, I'm going to be court-martialed. I should have ejected." So he hits a hard landing, and when he hits a hard landing, the landing gear pops down. So he pulls it out, and what he thought it should have been a complete screw-up looked to the pilots watching like a masterful job of getting the airplane on the ground. So he saves that plane, he gets a commendation, and he's sort of a Candide character. And throughout the book, he goes into these situations where he just happens to handle them brilliantly, all the while not sure that he's doing the right thing.
Oh, I tell you, I am just drawn to Daniel's character so much because in the dialogue portions, he has all the front that an officer is supposed to have, especially with his comrades and his superior officers and all that. But you also get inside his head also. So it's kind of like peeking behind the curtain.
Yeah.
And it's a great read, folks. Jim Autry has done it again in a way that's going to surprise many of you.
I think the word is shock.
Well, shock might be a better way. It's not out of character. It's not that Jim comes walking in the studio swearing like a sailor or anything like that. But this is a reality of the world out there that he witnessed during his time serving our country. And maybe I'm getting too broad and big about this, but the Cold Warrior, when flying was dangerous and safe was sex, is just a delightful read. It has shocking moments. You're going to say, "Oh my gosh." And I thought the scripts for today's films were a little bit wild, a little raw. But
there's a few triple X parts in it.
There are. But you had to have fun just to kind of cut yourself free in this whole new avenue, didn't you?
I enjoyed writing this book more than any book I've ever written. It was just sort of flowed. I loved doing it. I loved the scenes. I could relive some of them in my head. Of course, I was making up characters and basing some incidents on something that happened. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of work. I had to do a lot of editing, but I enjoyed it.
Well, I we've talked before. Have fond recollections of your service. Consider them a very formative part of your growing up.
Absolutely.
And it's kind of neat that you were able to compartmentalize those inside of yourself, your successes as a business person, as a father, as a community leader, and then still that was waiting for that proper moment to release.
Well, yes.
And release it did.
Well, you're kind of teasing your listeners now, John.
Oh, well, that's the idea. Folks, this is a fun read. The thing is once you have gone through the book, you're going to want to keep a copy. So buy a couple of copies because after you tell your friend that you just read Jim's new book, they're going to say, "Well, I want to borrow your copy." I said, "I'm not going to let this go." But tell you what, because you are a good friend of mine, I bought a second copy because I knew you would be there. But you can go online. You can just simply do some Googling. Jim Autry, James Autry. at The Cold Warrior, and you can find it there. Of course, locally, you could just go to great places like Beaverdale Books. I imagine it's available through Amazon and the usual outlets like that.
It is available through Amazon, yeah.
Good, good. So you should find a copy in your hands and find extended periods of time where you simply curl up in one of your favorite easy chairs and just get, and make sure, forewarn people in your house, said, I may burst out laughing at times because it will be inevitable. Why did it take so long for you to let this part of your life come out in the form of a novel?
Well, I thought I would write a serious novel about those days, and indeed I wrote a prologue and some things, and may still end up doing that, although I'm sort of inclined to try to do it in poetry. But I thought I'd write a serious novel because it was, with all the fun and the wild parties and everything, there were people getting killed, and it had its extremely serious moments. And we were on the verge of war a couple of times. So I thought I'd tackle it from a serious, always at risk thing. And then I realized that most of the time we were having fun. We loved flying, it was fun. And most of the time we were, you know, partying. We studied our targets, we did our serious, and just understand we took our work very seriously. We took the flying and the mission very seriously. But we didn't take ourselves so seriously, and we really had a lot of fun. So I sort of transitioned into thinking, I want to show that these guys were serious and were having fun. And you know, it was close enough to World War II. We still had World War II aviators with us.
Oh, the memories were fresh.
Yeah, my squadron commander was a triple ace in World War II and a double ace in Korea. He was called, his name was William T. Wisner. He was called the Whiz Kid. He was my squadron commander. We just worshipped him, you know, because he was one of the real hot pilots. So, but he was World War II. We were at a base in Germany where we were training the German pilots to fly instruments. And I was there for 45 days as an instructor. And in the officers' club, the German pilots, most of them World War II Luftwaffe pilots, who'd flown against some of our pilots, and they were all drinking beer together and talking about old times. And it's just such a phenomenal experience for a young guy, 20, you know. When I got out of the Air Force, I had over 1,000 hours of jet time and several hundred hours of prop time, and was a bomb commander, which means a nuclear qualified pilot. And I was only 26 years old.
Oh, it's amazing. You're going to find all this kind of historical and military context that from a bygone era. Jim Autry captures it so eloquently in some snappy dialogue and some really compelling scenes that, yep, I mean, even if you're by yourself, there are going to be times where you're going to blush. I promise you that. But it's going to be a great read. Do get your copy of The Cold Warrior. Jim Autry has done it again, and it's going to be a fun surprise for anyone who reads this. Don't give it to your junior high child to read. Don't try. I trust you will not do that, okay? This is a progressive time we live in, but let's not be too progressive. Jim, thank you for gifting us with this novel. I know you've commented over the years that you've been working on this novel. It's just been kind of slowly building to that kind of tipping point where it had to become reality. And even several years ago, you weren't sure exactly what kind of form it would take. This is beautiful.
Thank
your
you.
Newest child is a gem, and maybe a bit saltier than the usual child that we have in our households. But this is a great addition to the Jim Autry family of books. Make sure you get your copy of The Cold Warrior, When Flying Was Dangerous and Sex Was Safe, the award-winning author, James A. Autry. Jim, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, John.